Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week. I hope you have. I want to thank everyone that reached out on Wednesday to wish us congratulations and happy anniversary. It was our 11th anniversary. First episode of How Did I Get Here came out August 10th, 2011 with Susanna Schofield. And so for Wednesday's 11th anniversary show, I spoke to my old girlfriend, Jessie Clayton. Now she's my friend. Before she was my girlfriend, she lived with me when I started the podcast. And we talked a little bit about that, but then ended up really getting into life and overcoming trauma and you know, overcoming things in life to get where you are today. Great conversation. Go back and check it out. I'm still feeling, I tested negative for coronavirus yesterday, but I had it last week. For those of you that haven't checked into the show for a while, I got it last Tuesday. And I'm feeling better, but today I'm feeling really, really, really sluggish and really tired. So I don't know what's going on with that. I'm going to go check out Grace Sorensen, who you might have heard on the show a few months ago. She's doing Thursdays at the Firehouse here in Austin every Thursday of this month. So you missed the one from last night. But the next 2 weeks, go check her out, man. She's amazing. She's a new artist. She was on the show a few months ago. We had a fantastic conversation. I actually saw her first band performance earlier this year. It was incredible. I just heard some new songs of hers that are blowing my mind. So yeah, check her out. Grace Sorensen. Grace Sorensen at the Firehouse here in Austin if you live here. All right. Hey, gang, I've got a great, great, great show for you today. I spoke to this guy, Harry Springer, who has a band called Moonwalker. Moonwalker. Listen to moonwalker.com is where you go. Their album, Attack of Mirrors, drops October 21st of this year. Their latest single, I'm Afraid I'll Go to Heaven, is fantastic. There's a great video for it. There's a great, another single called The Price of Life Itself with a great single. I mean, it's a great single, and it also has a great video as well. He put out his debut album last year called Truth to Power. It's a 7-song album. I don't know when an album becomes an EP or when an EP becomes an album, but this is a 7-song album. It's great, man. Moonwalker is great. He's from Brooklyn. He's doing a thing right now where 100% of the proceeds of his Bandcamp sales are going to Planned Parenthood. That's 100%. Not many people do that. He's giving it all away. Fantastic dude, man. So he started this record at the height of the COVID lockdown in 2020, and he started making and selling music to sound libraries, and then eventually kind of realized like, hey, shit, I'm kind of making a record and making a band. And the music is it's like alternative rock pop music. It's the kind of music I love. He has a very, very, very Mark Bolan vibe from T-Rex. Sorry, I was drawing a blank on his name. The COVID baby, it's making my brain have farts. Anyway, we have a fantastic conversation about his journey in music, and he lives in Brooklyn. He's probably going to be heading out on tour later on this year. Find him at listentomoonwalker.com. Go to the Spotify. Dude, that guy's getting like 25,000 plays a week on Spotify on his songs. So get out there and check him out. He's shooting. He's a rising star. All right? Second record, Attack of Mirrors, comes out October 21st. Go check out those singles, I'm Afraid I'll Go to Heaven and The Price of Life Itself, and his debut 7-song album, Truth to Power. This is me talking to Harry Springer from the band Moonwalker. Let's get down. You're Harry?
Yes, I'm Harry.
I'm Johnny.
Nice to meet you, Johnny.
Nice to meet you, man. Are you in Brooklyn?
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Okay. Your music is fucking amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, dude. It's like it's one of those things where you you're waiting for a band like you to come along. That's when I heard you, I was like, oh, that's what I was waiting for.
That's awesome. I guess I agree because I'm just making what I wish was in the world.
Yeah. You know what's funny is there's something about, like, I'm a musician as well and a songwriter, whatever, all this stuff. There's something about when somebody makes a record, like you make you made Truth to Power on your own. What about all this new stuff that's coming out on The Attack of Mirrors?
It was the same process as Truth to Power. Actually, I did like the writing process didn't really stop from when I started with Truth to Power until until really now. Like there was just, I remember with Truth to Power, I knew it was done because like, there was seven songs. I think the last song I wrote on it was New Commandments, which was about like seven commandments. And then that made it like a seven track album. And I was like, that just feels right. Like each song is a commandment, you know?
Right.
And so it just felt right for me to be like, okay, that album's done. But I didn't like stop writing. You know, within a couple of days, I wrote like Price of Life itself actually was one of them. But I wrote a couple of songs from this album. So it never really stopped. And actually, I made that whole record at the same place that I made Truth to Power, which was my old apartment in LA. So I've made music since then. But those two were made like really within the same couple months and on the same like creative breath, I guess you could say.
That's drums on there, right?
Yeah.
So that's you playing drums? You played everything?
Actually, the only thing I didn't play is drums. Okay. I had my friend play drums. Yeah.
Okay, well, you just lost the gig. I was about to try and hire you for my band.
Oh, I'll be terrible. I can write a good drum part, but not play it.
Yeah. So you're in Brooklyn now?
Yeah.
Okay. And where are you from? Like originally?
I'm from
Denver?
Yeah.
Wow. What's it like growing up in Denver?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess I didn't realize it was weird. I guess I didn't realize what makes Denver not like a normal American city until I went to LA and then back to Denver, actually. Because, like, you know, I had my interest in Denver and they felt very like, I don't know, like isolated. Like I really liked coffee and going to record stores and going and doing all these things that are like, you know, like a big thing in Portland or New York or LA or something like that. And not like I felt like an outsider or some weird thing like that, but like nobody that I knew did what I did. You know what I mean? Like I knew where to go to these weird places and, you know, and so I felt a little bit like in Colorado, like I was kind of like a fish out of water, but what it didn't really matter because I did my thing. And then going to like, you know, Brooklyn or LA, like that's very much the norm. I'd say that, you know, how I like to spend my time is pretty on par with how most people like to spend their time.
Did you feel like you had to get out of Denver? Like I got to get out of here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that like part of it was, you know, being a kid and being like, oh, I go to Los Angeles and get the thing. But and that's not valid, but part of it was also, which is entirely valid, was like, I can't be where I grew up. Like I like Denver. In an alternate universe where I grew up somewhere else, I'm sure I'd be more inclined to be there, but it just, I had to get out. I had to go away from home. I had to not be where I was comfortable and familiar with everything and had my patterns and all this, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 23.
Wow. You're so young. That's amazing. Did you go to school or did you try to go to college or something?
Yeah, I didn't go to college. I was like, my parents, everyone in my family, I'm literally the first person in my family at all, except I guess my grandma, to not go to college. Everybody's very smart. And at first it was like, even when I was taking music very seriously and struggling in school, unlike my siblings who were great in school, my parents were still like, okay, well, you got to go to college. Like, you have to. And it wasn't until I remember I won in my old band, we won some like competition. So we got to play a big amphitheater in Colorado. And I guess that they registered that as success. And they were like, okay, you do not have to go to college now. They still made me apply to the colleges. But there was no way. There was no way they were going to convince me to go. Yeah, yeah. And I think that they knew it too. They like, again, fortunately that thing happened right before, my senior year. And so they, I think, started to warm up to the idea that it could actually work and I don't really need to go to college.
Right. Can I ask you a question? Are you Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's that trip that they were in. Well, no. The guy that I kind of started out in my first bands with, he was Jewish, and his parents sort of like, you got to do something like that's going to take care of you. Like, this is no way to take care of yourself until they see you on a big stage and they get fucking starstruck. And then they're like, dude, this is amazing. Keep on doing it. It's so cool.
Yeah. Everybody, all my friends, he's a rock star. My kids are rock stars. Exactly.
Yeah. I remember talking to his mom backstage at a show, which is, well, it seems like everybody likes you. It's fucking great.
I approve.
I approve of what you're doing here with the concert music and everything.
I wish it was in Yiddish, though.
So what? What did your parents do? What was your dad's and mom's?
They're both lawyers. They're both like divorce and civil lawyers. So that also, I mean, they speak a certain. You know, it's all a certain way. That even I was thinking recently, like, the music is very like confrontational and that tends to come from people.
It is very confrontational. I love that. Yeah.
And I feel like that tends to come from people who grew up around people who are not like-minded. And so then they become a little bit militant. And it's funny. I had so the opposite. My dad was always like that way. Like, my dad was always, and about the same things. Like, we don't agree on everything, I'm sure, but like, he was always very like, there was never like, oh, don't talk to your like racist uncle. You know, he just thinks this way. It was like, if somebody had a problematic view, he was going to like attack them a bit. Like, there was no accepting of like very kind of dated and, you know, shitty ideologies. And so it's different. Like, we don't agree on everything, but that I grew up, my parents, probably because they're lawyers, were always very like, no, we don't accept ridiculous opinions and bullshit. Like, that's not okay. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I'm glad I had that. I think that we'd be in a slightly better place in society if people kind of thought that way, within reason. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, some things can be tolerated.
Totally. But musically, were they where did you get your taste in music? Because it sounds, you look like Mark Bolan. Like, you know,
yeah, no, that's what made me like grow out my hair. Like, discovering T-Rex was huge, and then I saw at Amoeba in LA, there's a book of Jewish rock stars, and he's the cover. And I was like, oh, check it out.
And his real name is like Simeon Feld or something.
Feld, exactly. Yeah. And his brother's name is Terry Feld.
There you go.
His brother's got my name.
Yeah. You even have the Les Paul and all the whole, like, I think that's good. Yeah. Bolan's one of my idols. Like, I'm 53 and like, musically I get compared to him all the time. And like, you know, whatever I'm trying to do, I wish my hair was like that.
I always liked long hair. And then I remember seeing him and just like, I wasn't even like a young musician when I found him. It was like, you know, there's those people you find when you're young and they're like the archetypes to do. And then there's people when you're like a musician who you find and you're like, whoa, like, right. This is crazy.
Right.
No. And he was that for me. And that's like maybe more significant. I think that his influence on me is actually more profound because it came when it did, you know, and it very much was like, because like I was writing music and I was doing, But that kind of like gave me perspective. I was like, okay, I can sing like that. Like that's my range, so I can be a singer.
Yeah.
Also, I always thought like, oh, I want front men are cool. I want someone who's not holding a guitar. And I was like, well, he's the coolest person I've ever seen in my entire life.
Easily.
He's holding a guitar.
Yeah.
All the time, so that's bullshit. And also like the mystical lyricism, like, oh, I can be talking about the moon and all this, you know?
Yeah, you have that lyrically, because even though you're hitting on like social issues and like things like that, there is sort of a poetic sort of like a spray of words, like a Hubcap Diamond Star Halo vibe. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I'm glad you pick up on that. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
It's like painting with words. You get the idea, and it's more like impressionist lyrics or something. You know,
exactly.
You step back
I could not agree more.
Right.
Exactly. No, I that's like a big thing. I feel like lyrics, a lot of people think it's like poetry set to music. It's not. It's like its own thing. And whatever it was, like John Lennon, like had his finger on the pulse, like just the balance between being on the nose and not being on the nose and being poetic and making sense and not making sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really delicate balance. Lyrics are very interesting. But I feel like Mark Bolan just, he nailed it. And I always try to kind of exist somewhere in there where it's not like, this is the story chronologically, this is everything. And it's also not like, these are my beliefs, this is how, you know, it's like kind of shifting perspectives. And sometimes it's just words that phonically sound, you know, good and kind of capture the right message, you know?
Right, right. And to me, that's those are the lyrics that I gravitate to. Because they're more colorful than somebody telling you something directly.
I could not agree more.
Right.
I completely. And it's nice that, like, it's good if the message of a song can come through. But also, like, it's a bummer if everybody listens to the song and goes, I know exactly what it's about. You know what I mean? Like, that's, even, like, that one song by Foster the People that was huge all those years ago. It was, like, about a mass shooting. Like, if you read the lyrics, it's very obvious. But the way the lyrics juxtapose the sound makes it so you could, at the very least, people would be walking away with two very different ideas of it. You know what I mean? Like, the answer is there if you want to find it. But, like, I don't know. A lot of music now, it's like intended to be, like, you couldn't miss it. You can't miss what this is about.
Right.
You
right.
can't miss, you know, the message. And it's, I think it's cool when it's a little bit more subversive than that, you know?
Right. And a little more obscure so that way the song can mean something directly to you. Because you can take from it what you're hearing.
Yeah, exactly. If I know it's about like a breakup and you're listing specific things they did, it's just like, I can't, what do you want me to do with that? Like, you know, like maybe if I'm going through the same thing, then I can be like, oh, okay, we are feeling the same. But like, how am I going to apply that in a month when I'm not feeling those things anyway? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this. When you were growing up, when can you remember the music that made you connect with music and go like, okay, I want to be a guy doing that?
Oh, definitely. That's a great question. My parents, it's funny. They had really good taste in music. Like when I started getting into music, they would, you know, I'd be like, have you heard of, you know, ELO or T-Rex or whatever?
Oh, fuck
and
yeah.
They always had, and they knew them. But when we were growing up, I think music was just like different. Like they had a different relationship with music, you know, like they, it was always on in the car, but just like top 40 pop radio. Like,
right,
it was, you
right,
know,
right.
They,
yeah.
You know, like they liked music was always there, but like, or they'd buy like, you know, some greatest hits CD from Starbucks from
right.
an artist they
right,
used
right,
to
right.
like and listen to that for a day. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
They kind of cared about music, but not really. And then I went and saw the Beatles Love show in Las Vegas, which I think is like still running somehow. Because this is over 10 years ago. But I went and saw that and, that was my first time like hearing the Beatles or hearing really music like that at all. You know, and I had always like, there was songs I'd hear on the radio that I loved and I'd go like watch the music video and like pretend to be in the music video, like Linkin Park and, and the Killers and stuff like that. But it was nothing where I was like, I really want to contribute to this. You know, I was just like, yeah, this makes me feel cool, you know? And then the Beatles, that was when I was like, whoa, like I have to understand what this is and be a part of this. Like, this is so cool. And so I had asked my parents for years to let me start playing guitar. And they were just probably rightfully so. They were like, you're not going to like it. Like, we're going to buy you the guitar. You're not going to play it. And that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And then for this, I was like, no, I really need the guitar. So I got like, you know, one of those Fender starter guitar kits
yeah,
with
yeah,
the amps.
Yeah.
for my 10th birthday a couple weeks later. And it was like, I took my first lesson. It was like, the rest was history. I mean, that was like, I don't even hardly remember anything about my life before that. There's like before guitar and then after guitar when I became the person that I am, you know?
There's
so I guess I didn't even answer the question. The music then, I kind of just got into older music just because, you know, I found like Kiss and Led Zeppelin and realized that that's where the guitar, you know, is really the main instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish you lived here, man. Like
where are you?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never even been to Austin. I want to really bad though.
Oh yeah, you got to come down. Yeah, South by Southwest is down here and shit. There's
And I know Spoon's from there. Spoon's one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, they're fucking such a great band.
Yeah, oh, they're amazing. I love them.
Yeah, I kind of came up with those guys here in the 90s.
What other bands are there in like the Austin scene, or were there, I guess? Like what type of music?
Fastball, remember them?
I heard of Fastball. Yeah.
They're from here. Gary Clark Jr., you know that dude?
Oh,
guitar dude.
He's amazing. Yeah, he's
Stevie
amazing.
Ray Vaughan was from here, if you ever got into him.
Okay. Of course, yeah.
Black Pumas. I don't know if you...
Really?
Yeah, Black Pumas are from here. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Are they all still, like, based there?
Yeah.
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah.
So, I guess, eclectic or, like, mostly, like, modern rock, would you say there? Is there, like, I guess...
No, it's a lot of singer-songwriter... It's a lot of singer-songwriter country and blues.
Okay.
There's weird shit pops up every once in a while. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. There's hip hop. There's rap. There's a fuckload of like Latino and like salsa shit going on here, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, that actually makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Anyway, so I forgot where we were. Why does that happen? That's terrible.
I didn't really answer the question. We were talking about like how I found the music.
Okay,
I found it.
So here's the question I have to you, because music means something to all of us a little bit differently, right? Some people use it. It saves their lives. Like, you know, with me, it literally saved my life. My mom died as a teenager. I was already playing music, but it put me music became like like my everything. Right? Like my life partner. But when I first started doing it, I was 13 and I'd been taking guitar lessons. But what was happening to me at the time was I felt like I was fading back into this place where I was becoming like socially zero. And I was super horny and wanted girls to like me. And I went to a Cheap Trick concert with an older group of kids and an older girl. I was 13. She was 16. She told me she would sleep with Robin Zander because she loves dudes that sing and play guitar. And I was like, wait a minute, I play guitar. And then like the next day I woke up and I had a whole new life. And it was like freedom. It was like identity. It was so much more than just making music.
For sure. Absolutely.
So what did it mean to you when you made that epiphany and
first of all, that's so well said. I could not agree more with everything you just said. I guess it came in like waves. I think of it mostly in like when I started playing guitar, that definitely changed my life and gave me an identity and something to, I mean, like every day, something to look forward to. Every day I had a reason to come home from school and play guitar for a lot of reasons. I think like you were saying, it was just, it gave me like purpose in a world. Like it just gave me, I could go into this world and lose myself in it. And, you know, I would always like write stuff, you know, write riffs and whatever. It was a while before I was like a songwriter, but I would like make riffs. Like there was always a way I could express myself or a song that was really resonating with me that if I learned it on the guitar, I could feel like just a little bit closer to being on stage or writing it or something like that. And so that was huge. Like immediately playing guitar was just like my whole world. It was the only thing that I cared about. But also it was I had a little bit of the like shredder syndrome where it was kind
really?
Like an Olympic sport. Like how fast can I play and how many, you know, notes can I fit and how fast can I sweep and all this. And it was like that for like a couple of years. And honestly, like I listened to music that I have no attachment to, not even like nostalgic. Like there's nothing about this music that I like.
Right.
And I'm a little embarrassed, although it's like, you know, it gave me, I think, certain like like knowledge and skills on the guitar that otherwise I just would have never thought to develop. Like every other instrument that I know,
right,
which I learned after being a songwriter, I just know it like enough. You know what I mean? Even right. singing, I just know it enough to make the songs I want to make. Guitar is the only thing where there's always like tricks in the bag that I don't show because I don't think they sound very good on the album, but I've got them, you know, and I like, so I wasted a couple, not wasted. I spent a couple of years viewing it as a little bit more like, I'm going to be the best in the world. Like I was like an ass something. Yeah. And then I think I realized probably in like, I don't know, maybe like 9th or 10th grade that songwriting was kind of the whole point. You know what I mean? Like as soon as I like was in my first real band releasing music, I think I realized like nothing really matters except for the song connecting with people. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
and so that was a massive turning point for me where I like stopped, you know, doing the way that I allocated my time to music just changed entirely. I would before that, like go on YouTube and watch the guitar world, like bet you can't play this thing and learn the licks and do all this stuff. And then it became like, I was spending just as much time with the guitar, but I was like writing on the acoustic guitar and it just became like way different. And it still is that way. You know, my writing process is different now and it almost always involves, you know, having a production and doing it on the computer and kind of creating a loop that I like and then writing vocals over it. But it's still like, it's all about the song. It's always 100% about the song. And as soon as it became about the song, that's when it really became like, I think the most important part of like my survival, you know, like if I ever feel emotionally backed up or angry or worked up or like any negative emotion, really, it can be fixed by writing a song, and it's probably caused by not writing a song. It just is a really self-regulatory thing, you know what I mean?
It's like shitting emotionally.
It really is. It really is. The longer the time between, the worse I feel, the worse everything is.
Exactly, dude, exactly right. So what was that first band called? Will you please tell me?
I was always in bands. I was in a band called Thumbs and Noses, Buns and Hoses, which actually it was Buns and Hoses, and then I got booked to play the school picnic or something, and they said that name is inappropriate. Right. And I didn't understand why. I was like, so we did Thumbs and Noses. But Thumbs and Noses was just a reaction. But I was in a bunch of bands like that. But the first band I was in that I was talking about where like I started to learn and care about songwriting was a metalcore band called The New Haven. And that was like I was talking about music that I just don't even like, sentimentally. It is that kind of music. I'm sure that if I listened to the stuff that I made in that band, I would like just genuinely hate it. Not be embarrassed, like it's early, just like just truly not enjoy at all what I did at all. But I realized then that like by just being really angry and getting anger out and saying the most angry sentence I could think of, that I'd feel a little bit better at the end of it. You know what I mean? And that's when I kind of realized that's the point. And then that band became like towards the end, we do have one song out that's on YouTube called If You Can Hear Me. That is a song with singing and melodies and a chorus. And it's not like a bunch of screaming and breakdowns and shredding. And that was like, you know, my parents love that song and some people from school love that song. And suddenly I was like, whoa, there are some people who like the song, you know, who are like, wait, this is you. That's a good song. And that became like the most important thing to me at that point. And then that band, you know, I was in a couple other bands for a little bit. And then I started my band, The Midnight Club, which was, you know, my only band before. Yeah, it was. Although now we're getting buried because there's a show called The Midnight Club that's coming out. So that would have been a big problem.
Yeah, good thing you changed it. What made you think of Moonwalker or Moonwalker?
It was actually my girlfriend came up with a list of band names. And among them were like Radio Impulses, which I used as a lyric in TV Made Me Do It, or Box Office Poison, which I used as a lyric in another one of our songs.
There's a song. Wait, just really quick, a quick aside. I can't remember if it's TV Made Me Do It or Devil. One of them has a real Sly and the Family Stone kind of. guitar and bass interaction.
But okay, it's got to be Stevie Mania. Yeah, absolutely.
That was a great song, dude.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. For the guitar, I was also thinking like Born Under Punches, Talking Heads, but like obviously they heavily inspired by Sly and the Family Stone.
Well, your feel isn't as it's a lot looser than David Byrne. Like your right hand is a lot funkier than his. No offense to him, but
no, definitely. Well, and like at first I had a hard time getting into the Talking Heads because it really is like so rhythmic. I mean, like the guitar that doesn't even have the guitar parts don't even have to be the guitar. If you were to program that chord onto like you know a sample pad, it would probably be better played like that. Very rhythmic. And so at first I was like, I like guitar. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then when I got it heavily. And Talking Heads, like one of my favorite bands of all time. I love them. But yeah, it's incredibly rhythmic. And I still kind of approach it a little bit more like Pink Floyd in terms of the actual parts.
Right, right.
But like the idea of like the arrangement with the Talking Heads and there being a lot of different kind of rhythmic parts panned in different spots, that is like my favorite thing. That I think is the coolest stuff ever, you know.
What are you recording on? Do you like Pro Tools or something?
I do Logic just because it's like I learned on Garage Band, you know.
Do you use any outboard gear? You do it all in the box?
Literally all in the box. And I don't even buy, I have never even bought a plug-in just because like for me, it kind of like distracts me because I feel like I'm trying to get like what's in my head out there and like, it's a lot easier if I just know how to use what I know how to use. You know what I mean? And like even finding how to use all the different like plugins and stuff, I did it kind of just by like looking at the names, you know, like it's just like the first time I wanted something to like be a stereo thing, just like auto filter sounded like the right thing. And so that's how I got it. And that's what I do. And there's a lot of different ways to make that happen, but I use the auto filter because that's just what sounded like what I was looking for at the time, you know? So I really am like really green with all that stuff. I went in blind and just kind of messed around until I figured out how to do what I want. And then now it's like, I don't really want other stuff to complicate it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but like I get like, I like synths and stuff now. So I buy some synthesizers. Like, you know, I like instruments. If I'm going to get a weird sound, I like it to be like out of the box, out of the thing, and then I can use my basic Logic things to kind of work it into the song, you know?
Sure. Going back to Denver, when you decided to leave, how old were you?
I was just out of high school, so about 18 or 19.
And you went to LA?
Yeah.
And what happened when you went there? Like, were you able to put together? What were you going to do?
I guess, I mean, the short answer is the pandemic. but I moved there with my band, The Midnight Club, that I think I mentioned, where that The Midnight Club was the band where we played the, you know, at the amphitheater, and my parents had the come to Jesus moment where I could be a real musician, and they let me miss college. And so everybody in the band ended up, for the same reason, I think it was that moment for everyone's parents, skipped college, and we all moved to L.A. together. And we were, I mean, like what the reason that that band ended and this band began was the pandemic. We were there for like a year or a year and a half before the pandemic. And I mean, that we played live, we went and recorded with producers and did all this stuff. So that kind of stopped it, but that band definitely had an expiration date. And the reason is just because like, I was always putting together bands starting in the Midnight Club. I was just putting together bands that could kind of like fill the holes of what I couldn't do. So like, I wanted to write the music. I wanted to be the producer and whatever. I kind of just wanted to get what was in my head out, and I couldn't play drums or I couldn't sing or I couldn't produce or whatever. So I would bring in band members and producers and stuff to kind of fill in the holes. And over time there started to be less holes, I think, that needed filling. You know what I mean? And like, you know, at some point then we weren't using producers, and at some point then I was singing a lot of the vocals, and then our singer started working on his own project, and the music was like great. Like I was like, this is better than the Midnight Club, and people were telling me that some of the early Moonwalker songs were better than the Midnight Club. And I was like, well, then what? I mean, at first I was jealous that he's doing the other music, and then I'm like, what? Like, why? I'm making the best music I've ever made. He's making the best music he's ever made. And I don't think that he wants to be singing my songs, and I don't think that I want to be changing up, you know, what I'm going for, I guess, you know. Because I love collaborating, but, like, I've always wanted to have, like, my project where I can do what I want. And if I want to do a collaboration on it, that's great. But, like, I want, like, my project that I can kind of, you know, see through exactly my way. You know what I mean? It's great to work with other people with their own visions and see what you end up with. But, like, sometimes I want to see where that thing will take me, where that idea will take me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was important to have my project. And for a while, like, that was the Midnight Club. And I don't think that was, like, fair to the other members of the Midnight Club who are also creative people.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
So it just seemed like we were kind of going in that direction. And we also all happen to be more like kind of Trent Reznor type people where, not that we don't collaborate well, but, like, our best ideas don't necessarily come out in a co-write. They come out, you know, so, like, all of us are kind of like studio hermits working on our own music all the time, you know. And I think more and more people are like that nowadays, you know, because you can.
Yeah.
Like, you can make music by yourself on Logic.
Yeah.
But so it's like, you know, that's really what happened to the Midnight Club. But I mean, I guess we were just there for a year playing heavily. We were able to play around enough that we weren't distracted by stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter if we weren't always, like, creatively fulfilled, because we always had a show to prepare for and we always had a studio session to go to and stuff like that. So, like, I think in quarantine, we all kind of started to think about what we really want out of this. And it just naturally became different projects for me, you know, Moonwalker, of course.
Yeah. When did Truth to Power come out, in 2020 or 2021?
Yeah, 2021 September.
Okay. So you were doing that during the pandemic. You started it out by writing music to sell to sound libraries, right?
Yeah. 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 And it's like, that was because the Midnight Club, that was my first with the Midnight Club. I was like, okay, I'm going to keep doing the Midnight Club, but I'm jealous that everybody's doing their own stuff and I'm putting all my effort into this thing. So I'll just start selling to sound libraries for, like, some extra money and another thing I can control. And then I wrote a couple of songs that aren't on the album. And then also This Dark Town and Tear Down the Wall, which are on the album. And I was like, well, I don't want to sell these. Like, I'm too happy with them to just, like, cash out and be done with it. But they didn't feel like Midnight Club songs. You know what I mean? Like, I liked my vocals on them. I didn't want to have to change them and kind of make the arrangements fit into, like, the Midnight Club discography. And so I was kind of like, I don't exactly know what I want to do with these songs, because I don't want them for my project, but I also don't want to sell them. And so that was where Midnight Club or Moonwalker began. And then there was a couple months where I was doing both. We were all doing both our own projects and the Midnight Club. And then it just kind of naturally fizzled out, you know, because it cost money and time, and we were spending our money and time on, like, our projects, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you got tremendous response, you know? I mean, there's people out there, myself included, like, that wish we had a million plays on a song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
So you put it out, and how did that sort of, like, for someone getting started or something, like, what was the path that you took? I mean, first of all, I work with this nonprofit called Austin Music Foundation as, like, a mentor. And the main thing that we're always talking about is, like, hey man, don't worry so much about social media and all that stuff before you have great music that people want to listen to. So
absolutely.
You don't open a shoe store before you've ordered all the shoes.
Exactly. Exactly. And people seem, I think that, like, when you're making your own music, it's like magic to you that you made this happen out of nowhere, you know? And so it's kind of like, I, you know, when I look back on my old music, not to go off on a tangent, and some of it's terrible, and I'm like, oh, that's so embarrassing. How did I like it? But then I think back, it's like, I didn't like it. It's not like I was like, oh, this is amazing. I was like, oh my God, it's almost a song. Like, right, I can't believe I made this. It's almost a listenable song.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it, you know, and so I feel like when you're young, it's your inclination to be like, I can't believe I did this. Everyone's got to hear this. It's like almost as good as, like, real music. Yeah. I got to put it up. And, like, the truth is, for releasing music to be anything other than kind of depressing, you've got to have great music. Like, that's, like, the bare minimum. And then everything else is, like, an added bonus. But it's definitely, like, it's a little bit depressing to release music sometimes and have nobody listen or to get a lot of, you know, negative opinions. It can be pretty difficult.
Or just ambivalence.
Yeah.
Like no plays, no nothing. Like no one's saying it's shitty. No one's saying it's great. No one's even acknowledging it happened.
Nobody knew.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And especially when there's like nothing. No, I completely have been there. And I mean, I have not only been in bands since eighth grade, like I grew up in the internet age, like being in a band meant releasing music. I have been releasing music probably on a bi-monthly basis since I was in eighth grade. And I mean, yeah, most of those songs were heard by literally zero people, less than 100 views on YouTube to this day, you know?
Dude.
So it is disheartening for sure. But like, there is something inside of you that where you can't stop. And frankly, the more, at least for me, my reaction, the more disheartened I got throughout it, it didn't make me want to stop at all. It kind of made me go like, okay, well then this cannot be how I leave. You know, it almost like lit a fire under me more like, well, then I've got to make more songs right now because this can't be it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I release a song every month, then it doesn't matter if nobody hears this one because they'll hear one at some point. And even if they don't, I always have one more to look forward to. Like there's always something for me, even if it's only for me, something I believe in for the next step. So that's, I guess, really, that was all a tangent, but that would actually be the biggest general piece of advice I think is if you keep yourself excited, then you'll keep going forward. Whether you could think in your head, oh, well, if nobody hears this, I'll stop. But realistically, if you have another song you like, you won't, you know, like you're going to want to keep doing it.
Right.
And that's like the biggest thing. If you stay motivated, then you're going to keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I got to show you this. This is my eighth grade band first show.
But you look like a rock star. Like when I was in eighth grade, I remember wearing like basketball shorts on stage and the camp counselor being like, you can't wear shorts anymore. Like that, you look like you're in a band. That is hilarious.
I appreciate that. That's always been something I've strived for. It's important.
Same, especially though, because I started so away from there. that I still wish I could look that cool on stage.
Well, you've ended up in a great place. Like some of your shoes and photos and videos and shit, I'm like, what?
It's been a long time coming with the shoe collection. I have huge feet, and I like mostly boots that are just made for women, and so it's really, really hard to find women's shoes that can fit my giant feet.
Yeah. All right. So what made you go to Brooklyn from? Like what made you make that move?
I just didn't like love LA, honestly. It's
me neither.
There is a type, it's, and like I would never make a generalization about the people somewhere, because I used to hate the people in Colorado, then I went to LA and I hated the people in LA, and then I realized maybe I just don't love the vast majority of people, and that's fine. It's okay. Like, that doesn't mean it's a terrible place or I'm a terrible person, but maybe just if I run into someone on the streets, there's a chance we're not going to be best friends. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I don't think that it is what it is. But like, I do think that obviously the type of people everywhere are to some extent a product of the place. And I think that people going to LA to be a star, many of them not even knowing what exactly they want to do. And the way you kind of do it in LA being that you just show up to the bar and you talk to everybody and hopefully you bother this fucking guy enough to where he feels obligated to give you an opportunity. It's all networking and beating down the door and all this. And I just realized I am not that way. Never going to be that way. Never going to be like my parents, like go to the concert and introduce yourself. I'll never do that in my life, unless it's Paul McCartney. I'll never do that. And not only will I not do that, the people who do that aren't necessarily the type of people I want to collaborate with. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's not exactly my way of doing things. They tend to always want something from you and some type of, you know, it's like,
yeah.
So I was just realizing like, okay, the way things happen here, I'm not going to ever do that. That's never going to be the way that I do.
Right.
And that's fine. No disrespect to them, but also what am I doing? And then also like on a very personal level, I hated driving there and getting stuck in that
Yes.
Because it's not walkable. It's really not very walkable at all. Like, New York, I can get everywhere without, I rarely even take the subway. Like, it's so not walkable. And then it's also not drivable, because anything over a mile away is going to be like 25 minutes. It is absolutely unlivable. Like, you can't leave your house.
Where did you live there?
I lived first in like central Hollywood, like right across the street from the Netflix building, like very, I will say when I first moved there, Amoeba, the old Amoeba, was just down the street, and so was the Cinerama Dome.
Is that on Sunset or on Hollywood?
Yeah, Sunset, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And now Amoeba is on Hollywood, and I think Cinerama Dome might still be closed, I don't know. But so at the time, those were walking distance, and that was great. That was obviously enough, you know. But then those closed, and the pandemic happened, and there wasn't really anything. And then I moved to Silver Lake, which is probably like my favorite part of LA.
Me too,
but like,
oh, mine.
Yeah, it's great there, but I mean, like, I couldn't walk to places, and the drive was ridiculous, even if it was a mile away. Like, it's just all the same problems, you know. And even, like, in Silver, like, I loved it, but, like, my roommate, the singer of the Midnight Club, he got, like, assaulted 3 times by homeless people outside of our house. Like,
oh, no,
punched in the head, like Los Feliz was my favorite part of Los Angeles I still loved it, but like I wanted to live there. And then my girlfriend, who lived in like the prime location, like a naked guy broke into their house and hid under the bed, like just all this horrific,
Jesus
crazy
Christ.
Like it was crazy. And not that I left because I felt unsafe or whatever, but these things happened all the, you know, at the place in Hollywood, I watched a man bleed out from a stabbing and die in the Denny's across the street, or I assume die. I mean, the cops came at some point, but it wasn't looking good. Like it was a little bit crazy, but I guess just, I was always in the places that I really liked. And then this crazy stuff would happen and I'd be like, oh, okay. I guess that's just here. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But, I think for a lot of reasons I didn't love it. Also, like, I didn't really love the food or the coffee very much. Like there's good stuff there to be found.
Yeah.
But like, even like living in Brooklyn now, I was talking to my girlfriend. Anytime it's time to like choose food, I get like happy. It's like, yes, I'm going to do. In LA, it was like depressing. It's like, what do you want to eat?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You just want to get like McDonald's? I don't know. You know, it was like, it was actually actively, as somebody who loves food, it was actively kind of sad.
Yeah. I made a record there and my band got really tired of me wanting to eat Kookaroo every day.
What's Kookaroo?
Kookaroo was this chicken place. It was like a rotisserie chicken place.
Oh,
but they were everywhere there.
Called Pollo Loco or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but it was called Kookaroo.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit. So this new record, it's not coming out until October. You've got a series of singles out. Great, all great songs. I love Doombox too. It's a fucking great song.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
Are you going to play live?
Yeah, I'm planning like a small run right now for like September, maybe August, just like New York to Chicago and back, a very short thing, just get a couple places in there. But I'm going to do a lot more touring in 2023. Oh, at least a nationwide thing. I've got to get to Texas. I've got to get to like the West Coast. So I'll definitely do. I don't know if that'll be like a couple different runs or one big thing, but I definitely will.
How will you do it? Like logistically, like will you take an entire band or will it be you and the drummer and some tracks or you and the drummer or what are you doing?
Yeah. So I've always done in Moonwalker a 3-piece so far. Cause for Truth to Power, the idea of that record was that it could always be played by a 3-piece, whether it be me playing guitar and singing or playing piano and singing, which doesn't mean that there was, and then a drummer and a bassist, which doesn't, like, there's more tracks than that, you know, on the
right,
record,
right.
But they're non-essential, you know, like it could be broken down always to me on an instrument, singing, bass and drums. And so that worked well, you know. And then for this record, there's a lot of songs that need the synth, you know. It just so happens that a lot of the singles are fine. I can do those just as a 3-piece, but a lot of the record's pretty synth-based. And to play some of it, I'd probably have to bring out a synth player. But, like, you know, all of Truth to Power I can do as a 3-piece, and probably, like, half of this record I could do as a 3-piece. So I'll always do like a three, maybe a four piece. And then, you know, maybe at some point backing vocalists and other stuff would be cool. But it's kind of, it's deliberately a little bit malleable. I can go out with as few as three people and as many as an orchestra, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know you have a publicist, obviously, because that's how I got, that's why we're, how we got to do this. But yeah. do you have other people? Do you have management and booking agent, or what's your?
Actually, right now it's all just me. I've got like, I'm talking to some managers and some agents. But yeah, right now it's literally just all me.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah. It's, although I was looking for a manager for a while to help push the needle forward. And then when I kind of, you know, figured out how to use social media to kind of introduce people to the music, I was like, oh, well, I'm fine. You know, that's all that I care about is making the music I like and then having as many people hear it as possible. And if like I can do that myself, then I don't need other people telling me what to do. But now it's kind of at a place where now I'm just like drowned. There's just responsibilities I'm forgetting about and it's a lot of logistical things to deal with that I'm going to need somebody to help me with that. But for a while, I wasn't being like inundated with responsibilities and stuff. So all I really had to do was release the music and I could do that, you know, and frankly, I felt like I have a better grasp of how to release my music and appease my fans than somebody else probably would. And frankly, it's just because nobody's ever going to care as much as me. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But now it's getting, I definitely need somebody, if for no other reason than to just help me keep everything in order, you know?
Yeah. Did your girlfriend move to Brooklyn with you?
Yeah. And actually, why I went to Brooklyn, a lot of that was just realizing I didn't like LA and whatever. And she was like, we had both talked about wanting to live in New York for a long time, mainly because of movies like Hellboy, which I just found out was not filmed in New York, but like Hellboy. And there's just a couple movies that have such a good New York vibe that we love. And we were just kind of talking one time, like, okay, we both hate LA. How long is this pandemic going to happen? I'm sick of paying all this money for rent. And so we were looking at moving to like Portland or Nashville or something like that. And then we were kind of like, okay, I mean, if we're moving, why would we not just do New York and just save up for a couple more months? Like, that's really what we want anyway. Yeah. We're both like, yeah, at some point we'll live in New York. But we're like, well, why not now? When are we going to live in New York? Yeah, yeah. If not right when we're moving anyway. So that was kind of it. And it wasn't even like really career motivated. It was more just like, going to LA kind of left me under the impression that it didn't really matter where I was. You know, I could do what I'm doing anywhere. And I wanted to live in New York. You know what I mean? And also, like, if I'm going to pay $1,000+ a month for rent, it might as well be somewhere with a good music and industry scene, whether it be Austin or Nashville or LA. Like, if I'm going to pay the rent, it might as well be somewhere that the potential for something to happen is there, you know?
Yeah.
But priority being just somewhere that I enjoy, you know, and like living.
Yeah. Do you have your shit just set up there? Or do you record at studios?
Yeah, I literally got in this room. We have a 2-bedroom apartment, but so we have our room and then my studio there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like everyone here is like a Hasidic Jew. So this is a house meant to not be able to accommodate many electronics like televisions and stuff.
Right.
And it's like a giant master room and like a tiny children's room. And so the tiny children's room is my studio. It is small, but that's okay. I don't need it to be big.
Yeah. Do you use amps or anything when you record, or do you use in the box amp stuff, simulators?
Yeah, it actually depends. I use in the box stuff mostly because I like to be able to go back and change it. And I don't like the DI. That's so much DI and the signal. I don't know. I only like that if it's in a live setting so I can split the two signals. But on the record, I just like to get the tone that I like. So usually that's in the box. But sometimes if I want it to feel loud and feedbacky, I'll use the amp. So really, like, only if I want it to sound like an amp. But also, like, I guess I don't just go straight in. I use a JHS color box. I don't know if you're familiar with that pedal. Like, it's like a preamp and it's meant to replicate like a Neve console kind of.
Oh, nice, nice.
So you can get really cool, like blown out kind of overdrive tones. And so that I use for bass always. That's on all my bass stuff. And then for guitar, I either use that or I'll just plug my pedal board in and use an amp sim.
It's like having a Neve channel or something?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, I mean, it is almost over. Like, I could never go on my pedal board. I couldn't imagine using it live because it's so complicated. And even when you get one of the really cool tones, it's like, it's unpredictable, like a soundboard. Like, you know, some notes get too, you know, gated and compressed. Right. Some. So kind of like a weird, it's difficult to play with, but the tones can be just like insane. And so that I kind of have made that my main bass and guitar rig, you know. But like, again, sometimes I use my pedal board and an amp sim. Sometimes I use my little amp. But also, like, I can't go super loud here. And the only time I ever want to use the amp is if I want it to feel loud. If that's like the point, I want it to feel like it's in a room and it's reverberating everywhere, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that? What's the number that people can text you? Do they text you?
Yes. That's like a some type of, it's hilarious, actually. There's this movie, The Black Phone, that's out now. And their whole marketing, my girlfriend did this, was to sign up for their thing. And it's exactly what I have, the same app and everything. And so my girlfriend was like, I wonder what this is. And I was like, community. I know exactly what it is. I can tell you all about it. But so that's just like, it's like an email list. But just for text, like I use it to like send, you know, if a song's out or if a tour's announced or if anything like that. But people can text, like I it's fun to read some of the text.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love what you're doing. Also, I can't let this go by at all without saying that you're giving 100% of your proceeds, your Bandcamp proceeds, to Planned Parenthood. I'll say this in the intro too, in case people don't want to listen to us talk and they did like,
just because
that's really, when you told me how you were raised, that totally made complete sense to me. But also what a fucking, that's a great move.
Thank you so much. It was like, everyone was asking if we were on Bandcamp and I was always like, no, like, I don't really care. And then when the draft, you know, opinion leaked, it was like, oh my God, like what? I have about $40 in my bank account, so I don't know what I can do, but like, there's gotta be something that can be done here. You know what I mean? And so I was just like, I'll just set up Bandcamp. It's not like that's part of my, you know, part of the expenses that I need to live. I didn't have that. So I just kind of like viewed it like a charity fund, you know, like, I'll give it always to a movement that needs it, you know. But right now, and my thought with Planned Parenthood too, rather than like a local abortion clinic, was, you know, at the time it was just a draft opinion, and I was thinking my priority here is not to prepare for once this happens. My priority here is to prevent this fucking shit from happening. Yeah. And Planned Parenthood felt like the most powerful, you know, women's rights organization with the biggest name recognition. And I was hoping that could make, you know, take my money far. But of course, still, you know, fighting to have that overturned is still valid. It's not like we only have to have kind of, you know, reactionary stuff. You know what I mean? Like there can, we can still hope for there to be progress rather than to just defend ourselves from an onslaught of regression, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So that was the view with the Bandcamp thing, was really like, I've got to have like, there has to be some way where I can be doing anything to, and money talks. That's the only thing that seems to matter to anybody anyway. And there's got to be some way where I could be redirecting funds or creating funds, you know, to kind of, you know, help out social movements that need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also people get a sweet jams out of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And like, if you know, it's mostly, I'm sure, people who were just either going to donate money anyway, and they're like, oh, I'll get a record anyway, or they were just going to buy the album on Bandcamp anyway. So, you know, it's a bonus that it's going, you know, to someone where it could potentially, you know, have some type of benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're a great guy. I've really enjoyed talking to you, man. You are really such a great songwriter too, and such a great recording artist, and in your videos, you're such a great performer. Your videos are fantastic. People need to get out there and see those. The one for I'm Afraid I'll Go to Heaven, the Shining vibe on that is awesome.
That's my favorite one. That's my girlfriend does the videos, and she kind of had that whole idea. Yeah. That one especially was like her baby. She really killed that one.
Are you guys fans of the movie The Shining?
Huge. Massive.
Can I show you something? This is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
We got to be friends now. Okay, you're going to have to do the talking because my microphone won't pick this up. But hopefully the Bluetooth will stay on. I just want you to see this one thing in my room.
I'm such a fan of The Shining. No way. Wait, is it on? Okay, when you're back in, it's on canvas. Is it like the prop?
Hold on. So, I saw the movie in theaters like when it came out, and I was always fascinated with Scatman Crothers' paintings of the black ladies in the room, and so I wrote that on Twitter one day, and a fan of mine painted it for me. Now it hangs above my bed, just like Scatman Crothers.
Crazy, yeah, exactly. No, like the scene where he gets telepathically the message, and he's in the bed with the woman, and that is hilarious. Yeah. It looks exactly like it.
Yeah, she did a great job.
That is crazy. Because I thought it was like a poster at first, and I was like, wait a second. Like, because also, like, my mom randomly bought like. She bought a prop from one of the Scream movies. And she was like, it was a prop in some movie. And then she did research. And she just got it because it was like some art piece that she wanted, but it was cheaper because it was used in the movie and it had like blood splatter. So I know you can get movie props.
Yeah, I wonder if you can get
somehow
that.
They're out there. Yeah. I wonder. I found a website a while ago. I wanted to get my girlfriend something where they sell mostly like crew stuff, like crew hoodies. It's mostly not props, but they had little things in the movie Jackie Brown, the bail guy, Jack something, the bail, they had his business card.
They had a couple little things
for like $150 for a business card, which I'm not even saying that's not worth it because that's sick, but I can't do that. Yeah, I mean, for a business, like, it's either that or, like, five other gifts that she'll use on a daily basis or one fun, cool little thing that she can laugh about once, you know?
Right, right. Dude, all right, so the videos, I'm glad your girlfriend does those. Did she do other people's videos and stuff? Is that her jam?
So she started by doing our videos. She just started being like a director.
Wow.
Recently. And she does like, she's in New York, she's like a PA for some shows and she does short films. So now she's very prolific and she, I'm sure, will do other people's music videos. As of right now, it's just been me, but I mean like, she's been a director for like 6 months at this point, you know, she just killed. She's killing it.
Yeah. Well, man, I think I followed you on Instagram, but we should definitely stay in touch because I'm going to be going up there pretty soon. A friend of mine just opened a bar there in Brooklyn, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, or I'd tell you what it was. It's really nice.
Oh, amazing.
And
I'll follow you back.
My cousin lives up there. But, dude, it really has been great talking to you, and you are a phenomenal fucking artist, and I'm very excited to see what else I get to hear from you.
Oh, dude, I really appreciate that. Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. Take care, dude, and I'll stay in touch.
Great. That's awesome. I'll follow you right after this.
All right, buddy.
Great. Have a good one. Thank you for having me.
You too. Together. Because half of us ain't got no spine. Moonwalker, get out there and check out their singles. I'm Afraid I'll Go to Heaven, The Price of Life Itself. Find them at listentomoonwalker.com and get their album, The Attack of Mirrors, October 21st. Check out their debut album, Truth to Power, available now wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. I had a great time talking to that dude, man. He is really, really nice and really funny, man. I love that guy. Check out Moonwalker. I'm telling you, these guys are going to be huge. Don't forget when you're out there checking out, listen to moonwalker.com. go and subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. We're there, man. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. We're going back to two shows a week. These last 2 weeks of three shows a week have broken me with the coronavirus and everything. All right, gang. This is I'm Afraid I'll Go to Heaven, the single from the latest single from Moonwalker from their album The Attack of Mirrors. Get out there and check them out. Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Afraid I'll go to heaven. That's why I'm hoping that I'm right. Up through the steering wheel, they can fall. It's being little people all the time. I'll be fine as long as you go somewhere else. Truth is what you make it. So how about we make it fun? Who cares if it's already